Hello and welcome to America Trends. Thank you for being with us. I'm your host, Amy Fuller, and you are here with us on, if you're watching the first iteration here on Friday, National Flag Day. So there is that. Also, it is President Trump's 73rd birthday. Happy birthday to our Commander-in-Chief. Yeah. Oh, there they are. Well, that's trending today because apparently he said she's the next Jackie O and the liberals got mad. So anyway, a couple other things. National Bourbon Day. You want to celebrate that? Yay! Control Room loves that. And perhaps best of all, it is the birthday of the United States Army. 244 years. Thank you all for your service, no matter what branch you are in, including our director, Chris Janicus, 101st Airborne. Right, guys?
Yeah.
What a festive start to the show, everyone. Hey, we want to tell you coming up, we're going to have more trending stuff. And also Dr. Arlen Diamond of DiamondAssociates.net. You know, it is trending that the World Health Organization in recent weeks determined that burnout is now a syndrome that affects people in the workplace. They're calling it a syndrome now. She's going to talk about how management can help avoid it and take care of their personnel. I mean, it does seem like a rather large thing to conquer, right? I mean, who doesn't get burnout now and then from anything? Also, Barry Nussbaum with the American Truth Project going to talk about the political headlines of the day. He's got some stuff to talk about regarding Ilhan Omar, our congresswoman from Minnesota, and those attacks on two oil tankers near the Strait of Hormuz from Thursday that everyone is still talking about. But first, I want to just mention yet another death of an American in the Dominican Republic. And, you know, you hear people on TV say yet another. You mean another from yesterday? Well, yeah, it is. Just this week that this woman died, the seventh American to die in recent months in the DR, a woman from Staten Island, seen right here. 53-year-old Layla Cox died. Her son said he's getting all kinds of roadblocks and trying to figure out how she died. William Cox is his name. He says the U.S. Embassy told him his mother's death had been ruled a heart attack following an autopsy. Well, of course. But the other recent unexplained deaths made him suspicious. He begged his mother not to go because of this recent spate and these reports of, you know, these mysterious deaths of Americans in the DR. Authorities are reportedly investigating whether the mysterious deaths are caused by poisoning, by counterfeit booze, because apparently people have reported that after drinking from the minibar, that's when they got violently sick. And so they're looking, larger bottles and counterfeit, maybe. Officials in the DR say all the reports are part of a smear campaign, so there's that. President Trump says there is no doubt Iran is behind those oil tanker attacks, and he cites this. The U.S. Navy released video that appears to show an Iranian Navy boat taking an unexploded mine off the boat. One exploded and one didn't. These attacks, again from Thursday, threatening to block vital crude supplies to the world, and could trigger an all-out conflict involving Iran, and just a bunch of other stuff to this story. First, the Iranians said they had rescued all 44 sailors on the two ships, but now the White House says one crew was detained by the Iranians, so who knows? Take a listen to this, Mike Pompeo.
This assessment is based on intelligence, the weapons used, the level of expertise needed to execute the operation, recent similar Iranian attacks on shipping, and the fact that no proxy group operating in the area has the resources and proficiency to act with such a high degree of sophistication.
Okay, so that happened, and it's the second attack in a month to hit ships near the Strait of Hormuz. The choke points there, up to 40% of the world's seaborne oil travels through there. So that is really a crucial area. Again, on this day in 1777, Flag Day, U.S. still in its infancy, the Stars and Stripes adopted by Congress as the flag of the U.S. In 1916, President Wilson issued a presidential proclamation establishing this as National Flag Day. We're going to celebrate with the Air Force's singing sergeants coming up here on America Trends.
By the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed.
Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself.
Welcome back to America Trends. You are with the U2 America TV Network and Biz Talk Radio. I'm Amy Fuller. We are along with the American Truth Project's Barry Nussbaum here in just a moment. And what we are, well, there you can find the website, all kinds of news stories of the day and insight that you won't find anywhere else. Iran now, though. The U.S. does not believe the threat from Iran is over after those two oil tankers came under suspected attack Thursday. Senior officials say the U.S. has photographed an unexploded mine on the side of one of the tankers near the Strait of Hormuz, and they do believe Iran is responsible. So there's a lot going on, a lot of tension with Iran and so many other countries. And we're chatting with Barry about it right now. This is a very crucial area of the sea, Barry. And what are they just trying to jump bad with all of us or what?
The Straits of Hormuz, somewhere between 20% and 30% of the world's oil supply goes through that choke point on an annual basis, Amy. So when the Grand Ayatollah in Iran, who is the basically dictator, religious dictator of the country, non-elected, he's there for life or until someone kills him, declared last month that his intention was to choke off the oil supply going through the strait, people, especially the Western world, should have taken him seriously. Since then, there have been a number of attacks that are absolutely, unequivocally traceable to the footprints and fingerprints of Iran. They started out with the threat actually in April. Shortly thereafter, pipelines were blown up in Saudi Arabia. Drone strikes took place, very close overflights of American ships by drones took place. Then four tankers were blown up in April. The United States started the investigation and all fingers were pointing at Iran. And now, as you said, this week, two more oil tankers were blown up by marine landmines attached to the sides of these monster tankers. The U.S. Navy had to intercede, Amy, and actually rescue crew members. So on top of that, there was a bombing that injured a number of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. There was a missile strike against the American embassy in Iraq. And the airport, the international airport in Saudi Arabia, was hit by one or two missiles, injuring some 29 people. So Iran is reaching out and striking everywhere, and it's shocking to me that these are acts of war that will impact the world economy to the point where oil prices are now skyrocketing, and yet nothing is being done against Iran. And the cause of this apparently is the Trump sanctions have ratcheted up another level because Iran is going in the opposite direction, which is towards uranium enhancement. And even the IAEA says they could be on the brink of a nuclear bomb in under a month. And there's nothing anybody is doing about it other than the sanctions, which I applaud the president for, but so far, no positive effect that we can see.
So this activity, sometimes we don't pay attention to stuff that's not local, not in our country especially, but obviously world events are crucial in determining, you know, how we are going to live and what's going to happen next. And when you say the word nuclear, people sit up and pay attention. And you talk about 20 to 30%. There are some estimates that say 40% of the world's seaborne oil travels through this strait. And so Iran is really playing with fire. And these sanctions enacted by the U.S., they were supposed to kick in this week. Is that right, Barry?
Yeah, they've just taken effect this week. I think it's the third level of ratchet up. Look, Amy, the Iranian economy is in free fall. They're in big trouble. So what do dictators do, like Iran, when things get rough? It's no different than Venezuela or Cuba or North Korea. The people that need the food, the water, the jobs, and so on are the ones that suffer, and the military brutal dictatorship spends their money on weapons and terror.
Sure.
Remember, we funded Iran to the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars sent to them by Barack Obama, because he promised Iran would be just like us and pursue peace. And all they've done since they've gotten the money is export terror everywhere. In steps Donald Trump and says, the terror's got to stop. The missile development has got to stop. No more ICBMs, and certainly no more nuclear uranium enhancement that could be used for bombs. And instead, what does Iran do? Starts attacking oil tankers. That's why oil prices have been climbing up steadily on a daily basis. We are either headed for a war of limited engagement or something larger. And now Iran is threatening Israel as well to distract from the fact that they are in deep, deep economic trouble.
And these attacks caused serious damage to these ships, at least one fire there, and 44 sailors had to be rescued at sea. So it's no joke. It could have been much, much worse. So when you say nothing is being done, Barry, what should be done?
Well, you know, it's a difficult question to answer. You would first say as a diplomat, Amy, well, the United Nations ought to do something. Well, the United Nations is filled with supporters of pan-Arab Muslim hierarchies that unite against any kind of resolution that would control and put stronger sanctions on them. So what the president, our president, thank goodness, has done is said, you know, I'm not going to wait for the UN. I'm not going to wait for the EU. I'm going to institute very harsh sanctions. And if the rest of the world gets behind the United States, Iran will become more and more and more isolated. The second issue, in a direct answer to your question, Amy, is a military response. If Mike Pompeo's speech that he gave at the State Department turns out to be true and is demonstrable on a world stage, Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, said they have absolute proof, the IRGC, the Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps, is behind these attacks, then what should happen is the fleet is there. The Abraham Lincoln Carrier Group is literally on site, and there's going to be military actions on top of the economic sanctions.
Again, this attack, the second in a month, hit ships near the Strait of Hormuz. It was a very important area. We're going to talk about this a little more, and you have the stuff you want to talk about Ilhan Omar, Congresswoman from Minnesota. Stay tuned.
It's been 24 hours, I need more hours with you.
Congresswoman Ilhan Omar continues to break rules of law and decorum, apparently, according to people who are paying attention to her. And this is a whole new game with the new Congress that came in January. We're chatting more about it with Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project. We just went over a few things, some huge news from this week, as well as this, that they are pointing the finger at Iran, the U.S. is, for an attack on two oil tankers near the Strait of Hormuz. And, you know, the second in 1 month's time. And Barry, so May 12th, four tankers attacked with mines. May 14th, two pipelines blown up in Saudi Arabia. And then a missile at a U.S. embassy in Iraq. And then various drone overflights. Do you want to just wrap that up a little bit and we'll move on to the other topic? Because this is something we're going to be hearing about this in coming days. And, you know, it could get far, far worse.
The thing that's the most troubling, Amy, about this is certain noise out of the EU saying, well, Iran wouldn't do this if the United States just supported the Iran nuclear deal.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
That is appeasement on nuclear steroids, as if to say, you know, the reason why he beat her up is she didn't smile nicely. It's not an excuse to beat somebody up. Iran is breaking international law. It's a terroristic state. These acts of terrorism border on declarations of war against international shipping, against the United States and our allies, and the world should unite against Iran, and there ought to be a really, really strong message sent militarily, because I got news for you. People, especially where you are in California, are very upset about gas prices. If the price of oil goes up 20 or 30%, The price at the pump would go to the moon very quickly. And I think that's what Iran wants to do. They want to be so obnoxious, so aggressive, that the appeasers around the world that say peace at any cost, like 1938, you know, when the UK went to Germany to appease Hitler, what they got in exchange was World War II. And if we don't move aggressively to shut this down, we're going to have some sort of conflict that gets bigger by the day if we don't choke it off now. That's my take on it.
That's what you think will happen next?
I think so.
Just a lot to think about, boy. Just wants to give you pause before we move on to this whole Ilhan Omar thing, which we've been talking about for months. Apparently, she continues to break rules of law and decorum. She is fined by the state of Minnesota. That's her district. That's her area. That's her state, for campaign finance violations. And, you know, a local paper wrote a scathing editorial about her brazen behavior. And a lot of people do say it is brazen behavior. Fraudulent tax returns with a man, not yet her husband, but returns are joint as if they are married. Is this a dude that might be her brother, Barry? I mean, what the heck?
Yeah. There's like three stories wrapped up in one.
Right.
The obnoxious gift that keeps on giving. Oh, just sure. When you think she's going to be normal, she's not. The local paper did an expose that the state of Minnesota has fined her the maximum under the law for dipping into campaign funds and spending the money on herself. So that's problem number one.
Herself. Do we know what? Was it manicures and clothing and scarves or what?
The state of Minnesota commission that regulates this said it was on personal travel and personal expenses that are illegal under Minnesota law. So basically, she was using campaign money as her piggy bank. Yeah. That's problem one. She's going to have to pay about $3,500 in fines. Problem number two is that she filed joint tax returns with someone that she said was her husband when she hadn't yet married that guy, she was still married to another guy, that there's a substantial amount of evidence that other guy is her brother, and that sham marriage was put together in order for her to receive her immigration and citizenship status because he was ahead of her in the process. So once that paperwork came through, she dumped the brother in favor of the new guy, filed a joint tax return, but guess what? They weren't married. That's not legal. So now the IRS is looking into the brother marriage issue and the tax return issue. In addition, a number of publications, starting with the Associated Press, is saying, we want to see the tax return. We want to see how you filed. She's refusing to give up those tax returns. However, on a daily, consistent basis, she proclaims if Donald Trump doesn't give up his tax returns, well, he should be impeached. And that's just the start of her problems. She came out with a press release in favor of confiscation of guns, saying 500 people a day are killed in this country by guns. Massive amount of statistics are coming out now that on an annual basis, annualized from last year, and as a snapshot, she's exaggerated her statistics by somewhere in excess of 500%. But you're not allowed to confuse facts with emotion. She's emotionally right. Therefore, her facts really shouldn't matter so much. It's a really, really bizarre way to deal with your critics by just saying, hey, stop it. I get to say whatever I want.
AOC did something like that before. She said, well, it may not have been true, but, you know, that my heart was in it or something. Just
exactly.
You can't make this stuff up, right? But going back, you almost need a flow chart for that. We've been hearing for months about her marrying her brother for the immigration status, et cetera. But I guess she married one guy legally at the same time filing a joint tax return with that different guy.
She was still married to the other guy, whoever he is. That's bigamy. In every state in the country.
You wonder if anything will really happen or if she'll get away with it and it'll get swept under the rug. What do you think?
I don't know. She does so many weird things and such things that have no semblance of any fact. For example, In the past couple of weeks, the president has come out with a merit-based immigration plan, which, in frankness, is not very revolutionary. Trump actually said he's copying the rest of the world.
It's almost common sense, and why don't we do it? As he says, we have the most ridiculous immigration and asylum laws anywhere.
Don't you think we should get the best and the brightest who should qualify to come to our country, like Australia and Canada and so on? And if you want permanent status, you got to bring something to the table, not just climb over the fence or dig a hole under the fence. So when he comes out with the statement saying, I want merit-based immigration, which is the best of the best ought to get in first, Ilhan Omar comes out and says, that's racist.
Why is it racist?
Because it'll limit the amount of the people coming in that are unqualified to be in this country.
So what's that mean? She pointed to Latinos. Are she saying Latinos are dumber than the rest? Because it sounds like she's being racist.
Yeah, you're making a very wise point. If it's racist, that means the people that she's trying to protect, in other words, they should keep their immigration status, as you said, Latinas and Latinos coming from South and Central America. She doesn't think they qualify. She doesn't think they're good enough to make it under a merit-based system. So according to the esteemed representative from Minnesota, everybody ought to get in without any qualifications, because if you qualify people, well, then, Amy, you are a racist. Oh,
only 12% of legal immigrants to the U.S. are selected based on skill or merit right now. So it is something to be looked at. We'll see what happens in coming days. Hard break, Barry, but find more about him at theamericantruthproject.org. Barry, we can't thank you enough for your insight. Have a great day. And now it's all good. That a flag was still there. Our flag was still there. Our flag was still there. Celebrating Flag Day. That was our own Curtis Matovich. He's a composer and arranger. He recorded that. He did the vocals. And he, along with Scott Sifton, so thanks to them. Really good tunes. We are celebrating Flag Day, as I said, and President Trump's birthday, 73 years. Birthday of the United States Army, 244 years. It's a great day to be patriotic and to, pray for our troops everywhere, all our branches, our president, all that good stuff. Hey, we are also talking this hour here on America Trends. Thank you for being with us. To Dr. Arlen Diamond of DiamondAssociates.net, we've been telling you how the World Health Organization, the WHO, well, recently they declared that burnout is, they've redefined it to strengthen its link to work. They defined it as an occupational phenomenon tied to chronic workplace stress that's not been successfully managed. Boy, a lot going into that. Dr. Diamond is here to talk to us about a few things, including how management can help their employees avoid it before it even happens. Dr. Diamond, welcome back to America Trends. We're always so glad to have you.
Thank you. I love the pictures you put up. They're so great.
That's Chris Janikas of the 101st Airborne Army guy. And then Curtis there, too, like hitting those buttons and finding those. Yeah. They're really great. And we appreciate them every day of the year. But so we have to try to help our employees not get this burnout. We should be taking steps ourselves as the said employees, but what kind of role does or should management have, Dr. Diamond? You've been working on things like this for decades.
Well, I think the most obvious is the style of management, that managers are like parents in a sense, in that they're perceived as overly powerful. And so if they're harsh, if they're bullying in any way, they're going to keep their employees in a state of anxiety. So what the most important thing is to be able to modify your style of management so that you get what you want from people without scaring them half to death in the process. So bully management just doesn't work well. It's short-term effective because you can get somebody to jump through hoops, but long-term it really, really harms your relationship with people, and they burn out faster. So that's number one. Number two is look around and be aware of the interpersonal relationships among the team members. Now, those of you that are listening to me that are men, you tend not to notice those things, and I'm just generalizing, so don't attack me for stereotyping. But, you know, generally speaking, men will get the work done whether there are personality issues going on or not, whereas for women, we tend to be more sensitive of those personality issues, and they interfere with our thinking because we react to them emotionally. So as a manager, be aware of the team interaction. Know what's going on, and don't just sweep it under the rug. Don't just assume you have no responsibility because all you care about is getting the work done. You really care about getting the most from your employees in the best possible way.
Because it does seem like there's so much that goes into it, and I know you've witnessed it. So you go, I know you help, you go in actually into work, you do workshops, but you go into workplaces, they hire you, and you help everyone from CEOs on down to get the most out of their business and their corporation and their employees and themselves. What do you, I guess the first thing you do, you would go in and identify, your staff seems to have low morale because of this, and it seems like you might be doing this, but here's what you could be doing better. Is that what it is? I mean, what can you tell our audience that could help them just from talking to you today?
Well, yeah, I try not to do it exactly that way. One of the things that happens a lot with consultants is they come in, they observe, and they write a report. And, you know, unfortunately, they could be 100% right in what they were saying, but the follow-through doesn't happen. So I much prefer to work directly with people. So yes, I'll observe, and yes, I'll have my observations, but the odds are I'm going to also be asking questions and coaching and letting the people that are involved in the process come to the realization themselves. And then together I'll work with them to find solutions to whatever it is they need to find solutions to. So it becomes a collaborative effort rather than me shining down from on high.
Right, because you don't want to go in and be that workplace bully. You need to buffer the people who need to buffer to their employees, I guess, in a sense, and have them, you need to have them on board with what you're saying instead of, you know, bumping up against them and having them say, oh, this lady doesn't know what she's talking about simply because they don't agree or because they feel attacked.
I think that's a good point. I hadn't even thought of it from that point of view, but you're absolutely right, Amy. That does happen all too often. Maybe that's for the primary reason that these reports, you know, that they pay thousands of dollars for get ignored. Yeah, I try very hard to let them come to the conclusions they need to come to with my nudging. And that's a good Yiddish word, but that's exactly what it is.
Say the Yiddish word again. I love this.
Nudging.
Nudging.
Yeah, you know, little pokes.
Yeah.
Little pokes. Yeah.
Oh, this guy. He's telling his employees. What do you think he's saying right now? Come on, people. Get it together.
Get it together. Yeah. They're not looking too happy, are they?
Well, I mean, people have heard of burnout. It's long been an issue for employers and employees alike. And, you know, it can be determined apparently through three symptoms: feeling of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from one's job, or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to your job, and it can reduce professional efficacy and all that good stuff, all those big words. But so it really can, it really does bear having the spotlight put on it and having us deal with it and try, like employees and employers alike, trying to get ahead of it ahead of time. So I appreciate your efforts on this and some of your insight. Anything else to add? What can employees do to sort of manage it?
I think, you know, I think the three examples, the three issues that you're raising are very important, because what happens is the employee is now torn in multiple directions. They're no longer just focused on the work and congruent. Mm-hmm. They're focused more on protecting themselves in some way, because they're physiologically is feeling threatened, and so they have to protect against that. And you will see, if you're looking, as a good manager, if you're looking, you'll see those signs. They're less friendly. They get upset easier. You look at their body language, and you can see that they're being self-protective in their body language. But for the employee, for the person feeling this, you're going to get physically ill. So it behooves you to not let it get that far. So what can the employee do? Well, obviously, depending on what the cause is. If the cause has to do with the tasks that are assigned, perhaps try to get reassigned to something else, perhaps take up some hobbies outside of work that in some way counterbalance it. If it has to do with an issue you're having with another team member, then I think the important thing is to bring in somebody that will mediate that conflict, someone like me, someone in, maybe in your own HR department, but someone who's capable of helping you resolve it with the other person. If it's a management issue and you feel that that manager is being unfair to you, look around and see if that is his or her style. Are they being the same way with other people? And if you can see, you know, without going around questioning, if you can see that other people are also intimidated by this person and uncomfortable, well, maybe that's the time to report it to HR in terms of the manager needing some coaching. There are lots of managers that I wind up coaching, from senior VPs, well, even CEOs, but, you know, mostly the C-level suite all the way down to new managers. Because people manage, they're promoted because of their skills, not their people skills.
Right, and that is a good, that's something, that may be the number one thing that they should be good at. Doc, we're going to hold you after the break, hard break. I want to talk to you, should we trust HR and some other elements regarding this topic when we come back? Hey, stand by here on America Trends for a little celebration of the U.S. Army's 244th birthday. Today, this week, all this month. Pray for our troops and, keep them and our commander-in-chief to 73rd birthday today in your prayers. But first, we are talking to Dr. Arlen Diamond of Diamond Associates, diamondassociates.net. She is internationally recognized in leadership, management, professional development, organizational development, specializing in people and the processes in your workplace. She can streamline them, make them. Got all these books. You should check them out on her website and or on Amazon. And we really are so glad to have her nearly every week here on America Trends when we can get her. Right now we're talking about burnout. The WHO, World Health Organization, determined it is a workplace syndrome. And we're just talking a little bit about that. Welcome back, Dr. Arlen Diamond.
Thank you. You said something right before the break about trusting HR.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because, okay, we know who they work for, but they're supposed to be an advocate for the employees. So when you report things to HR, what is that? What is involved in that? And how much can you feel like you can trust them? Is this a shaky topic?
No, it's a stinky topic, unfortunately, because HR gets a bad rap. When I did I think you know this, we've talked about it, I researched managing creativity in the workplace. And I spoke to 50 C-level executives. And of the 50, 49 hated their HR departments.
Huh.
And they each had stories to tell as to why. So HR is there, and certainly the benefits compensation side, the hard side of HR, works effectively. It's the soft side of HR, the so-called business partners or the counselors in HR that get the bad rap. And I'm sure that there are many that are good and honest and decent. But yes, they work for the company. Their loyalty is primarily to the company, and they're there to be protective of the company. So that can pose a problem. On the other hand, they're supposed to, notice I said supposed to underlined, they're supposed to keep the conversation with you confidential. Mm-hmm. So be careful. But yeah. If you have to report the bad behavior of somebody, of a manager, of somebody in management, HR is probably the most reasonable place to go. If you don't find that you get a positive response for HR, and by that I don't mean that they're going to necessarily agree with you, but that they honestly look into it. Mm-hmm. If you don't get that, then go to upper management. Go to a couple of levels above the manager that you want to report, and see if you can get some help that way.
You know,
but HR is just a mixed bag.
Yeah, that sounds right. You know, I can't help but bring this up because I had an experience once. You talk about the line down from management to employee and getting along and the bullying, et cetera. I worked at a place once. I really adored it, adored the job. But one day I realized I was stressed and I couldn't figure out just what is it. And I realized I have 11 people at that particular place I was reporting to. 11. Because the owners were in the building, middle management, 11 people that I had to make sure they were happy every single day. Is that a little crazy? And how do employees manage that? I mean,
but You know, that's the old secretary days, isn't it? I mean, we're laughing when you're talking about that. When I was a kid and worked in offices as the girl, you know, that you were reporting to everyone and anyone above you. So yes, there are strategies.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, there are strategies for managing it. And I'll tell you one of the easiest things to do, instead of having one inbox, what I did is I got, you know, the colored dots, the different colored red, blue, green dots. And I had a series of inboxes with different colors, red being urgent, and I don't no longer remember the schema. Red being urgent, blue being I just need it by, you know, the end of this week, and green whenever you get around to it, that kind of thing. And I trained my managers into being respectful. And when they gave me work, and we're talking back in paper days, obviously, when they gave me work, for them to determine how urgent it really was. And most of them played fair. You know, you look in the inbox and you see she had six things to do that had urgent on them. And so you would kind of delegate yours down if it wasn't really urgent. So that just that technique of having them think about how urgent is it really helped tremendously. Where the conflict comes in is when manager A is saying, do it with a blue pen, and manager B is saying, no, I want you to do it with a red pen. Then, you know, then you have to bring them both together and remind them that you can't do please both of them, that they need to decide which pen you're going to use. And I've used that technique. I did that with my doctoral dissertation, as a matter of fact, because my committee was driving me crazy. But no matter how low on the org chart you are, you have the right to say, I need your help figuring out which is the best solution here. Mm-hmm. And you don't do it in a nasty, how can you make me crazy way, which tends to be my style, but you do it in this, you know, please help me here. You're both asking me to do the same thing in a different manner, shall I do?
There's so much of that. Dr. Diamond, it really is, it's so crucial on both sides of the coin. So thank you so much for chatting with us about this. We'll see you next time. It's diamondassociates.net. Thank you again, Doctor.
Thank you.
Appreciate you so much. Want to again tell you that we are celebrating the 244th birthday of the U.S. Army. Want to celebrate them a little bit right now. Take a look.
Since before the birth of our nation, Army soldiers and civilians have answered the call to live with purpose, to make a difference, to live for something bigger, to stand firm when others may falter. They follow in the footsteps of giants. From those who first fought for our nation's freedom, to those who stormed the beaches of Normandy, today's soldiers and civilians continue to answer our nation's call. For 244 years, a deep and powerful bond has been forged between America's soldiers and the nation they serve. They have remained vigilant, ready to defend our families, our neighbors, and the American way of life. They fight for what matters. They fight for country. They fight for honor, they fight for one another, and they fight to win. Though the character of war has changed, one thing has never and will never change: the strength and character of a United States Army soldier. These extraordinary men and women choose a different path in life, a path of uncommon selflessness, of service, a path that ensures all our freedoms. Whatever the challenge, wherever the mission, when America needs her best, she sends a soldier.
. 1775, how about that? 244th birthday of the U.S. Army, and we're celebrating Flag Day, President Trump's birthday. God bless America, right? We're also going to have some of the singing sergeants ahead of time here on America Trends. Stay tuned for that. The Air Force singing sergeants. Wait till you hear this.
He got his head stuck in the acorn thing. Hey, what's up, buddy? There you go.
Sure, glad you've been with us for the hour here on America Trends on the U2 America TV Network and Biz Talk Radio. Catch us 24/7 on our websites or social media. We would love to interact with you there, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the usual suspects. Thank you also to our guest for this hour, Barry Nussbaum of the American Truth Project, talking about that those attacks on those tanker ships in the Straits of Hormuz, and also Dr. Arlen Diamond, diamondassociates.net, talking about workplace burnout, how employees and employers alike can try to offset it before it even happens. Finally, we want to say happy Flag Day and happy 244th birthday once again to the United States Army. And also, did you know there's something called the Singing Sergeants? No, this is the Air Force, but they are celebrating Flag Day. They recorded Betsy Listenfeld's song called The Freedom Song on this Flag Day, which eloquently speaks to the pride that the home of the brave and the land of the free represents. Take a listen as we say goodbye for now.
We walk with a different step.